All right, good morning, everybody. We'll go ahead and get started with the Austin Firefighters Retirement Fund regular meeting for December. It's Friday, December 20th, 9 a.m. We do have a quorum. There's four trustees here. The mayor is not here today. Before we begin, if we could, let's have a brief moment of silence for firefighter Randy Kohutek, who passed away on November 27th this year. Thank you. And Gina, do we have any public comments?
We have no public comments this morning.
Okay. Let's go ahead and move on to agenda item number one, the consent agenda for the minutes of the regular meeting, November 18th, 2024, as well as the service retirement benefits for new retirees, beneficiaries, and alternate payees.
I'll move to approve the consent agenda.
All right, do we have a second?
I second.
We have a second, all in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Okay, we'll go to agenda item number two. Consider initiatives for 2025 Texas legislative session, including granting authorization to executive director with respect to legislative initiatives.
Good morning, trustees. Anumeha Kumar. With this agenda item, I just wanted to remind you all. The board approved the proposed pension reform FSRP proposal at the November board meeting. With this item, we don't have any substantive discussion, but it is an action item where we are recommending that the board approve giving authorization to the executive director to work with legal counsel in getting a bill drafted and filed at the legislature. So that's effectively what this agenda item is about, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
If I could make a motion first and then move into discussion.
Sure.
So I move to approve granting authorization to the executive director with respect to legislative initiatives.
Okay, do we have a second?
I'll second.
All right, any discussion?
If you don't mind. Want to make sure that we're up to date and that everybody understands where we're at this time. So if nothing has changed in the last few days, the city still considers us at impasse.
That's correct. With the bill that we are hoping to draft, of course we'll go through that process with Jackson Walker, but as far as the approved proposal is concerned, we are still going to continue to try to reach out to the city and work with them. So in that regard, just as a quick update, the working group is still continuing to talk to Chiron to consider options regarding that legacy unfunded liability that the city is predominantly concerned about, and that's something we will continue to look at and potentially reach out to the city if we have additional thoughts or recommendations for them to consider.
And it's my understanding that the city intends to file a bill this coming up session.
That is my understanding as okay. well.
And so it's your experience in the past that if we do not file a bill, that puts us in a disadvantageous position in comparison, because then we're just dealing with the city bill rather than having our own bill, correct?
So that is correct. And from the fund's standpoint, of course, if the system doesn't file a bill and there's a bill that's filed by the city, then from a strategy and legislative process standpoint, it does put us in a difficult position. But then also to build on that, it's my understanding, regardless of the proposal that the working group presented to the board, there is general consensus amongst the trustees that the issue or the potential funding soundness restoration plan that could be triggered next year needs to be addressed as soon as possible. And one of the ways that can be handled or a way that would be memorialized in state law is to go through the legislative process and make changes to put the plan back in a sound financial footing. So both from a strategy standpoint as well as from a fiduciary as and a general consensus from the trustee standpoint, it is important that we consider filing a bill this upcoming session.
Okay, and because of those reasons, we're at impasse. We continue to try and have conversations with the city, and so far we don't have any meetings scheduled. They are filing a bill. We need to file a bill in order to defend our position. So because of those reasons, I think it's important that we be involved in the next legislative session and that you have the authority to do what you need to do to help protect the fund. And so therefore, I'm supporting the motion.
Thank you, sir. And just to add, the bill that we would be working on with Jackson Walker is essentially at this point reflect the pension reform proposal that was presented to the board with one difference where the Group B contribution rate would be at 18.7 as well.
So thank you. And first and foremost, I do agree, you know, with what Doug stated. I do want to express my support for legislation during this legislative session that will improve the financial health of this system. I think it is important. With that said, since this item does support the November working group's proposal, and there were several components that I did not support within that proposal, which is why I did not vote for it, I will not be able to support this item. And one final note, I do hope that the system does continue to work with the city. I know I've been expressing it this entire legislative or initiative through discussion that I think the most effective way to move this legislation through is for a joint proposal, and I still am holding out hope that possibly that may come to fruition.
And just to reiterate on that sentiment, I'm hopeful that we will come together with the city and have a joint proposal to submit going forward, because I'm skeptical of the success of any two proposals that are significantly different going forward being successful.
All right, thank you all. I appreciate the perspectives from everybody, and thank you, Chief and Anu, for outlining that. I do agree with granting Anu the authority to move forward with pursuing a bill in light of the fact that the city might pursue their own anyway, and also do very much appreciate your perspective, Belinda, on and Chief Wolverton, on meeting some consensus in the meantime as this process moves forward. So with that, I think we're ready to take a vote on this motion. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Okay, motion passes 3, or all opposed, excuse me. Motion passes 3-1. Okay, we'll move on to agenda item number 3, and this is the consider contract approval for fund lobbyist. And I believe with us today is Denise Rose of Jackson Walker.
That's correct, trustees, and Denise Rose was gracious enough to come in today to talk to you all, answer any questions. But just as a quick introduction, going through the legislative process, as you all very well know, especially looking at the 89th legislative session, is not going to be an easy feat. Of course, we have Schlatter Group that's helped us, guided us in the past, and will continue to moving forward. But given this is a big reform package that we will be bringing to the legislature, we wanted to make sure that we have as much guidance as possible. And so staff is recommending hiring a legislative consultant for session time. So this would be an arrangement where Denise will come on board and we will partner with the Schlatter Group as well from January through June for now. And Denise is very uniquely positioned. Of course, she can speak to her experience, which is incredible and very impressive. She has decades of experience working with the legislature, both from the legislative agency standpoint, where she was recommending and advising the legislature, as well as advocating for stakeholders going through the legislative process as her clients. And she has a wide array of experience and has success in getting a lot of legislations passed as well. And she is uniquely positioned because she is a partner at Jackson Walker. And we will be working very closely with Chuck and Elisa going through the legislative process, working on our bill. And with Denise being at Jackson Walker, they would be able to partner together as well. And I think that's a big plus that Denise brings to the table. So we are recommending her for this position. Denise.
Oh, good morning. Thank you all for having me. I'm Denise Rose. I'm happy to be here. I have been at Jackson Walker. It will be 9 years in January. I've been working around the Capitol for 20, and I work on a wide array of issues at the firm: healthcare, municipalities, animals, aggregate and concrete. And so my expertise that I bring is really not a subject matter expertise. That's what I rely on Chuck and Elisa for in Anu, but ability to guide clients through the legislative process and the timing and potential landmines and dynamics that await in the Capitol in the 89th legislative session. I'm happy to take any questions from you all, but that's my background.
I have a question. It's probably more for Anu than for you, but thank you for the introduction. Anu, is this contract simply for the legislative initiative, or is it also for legislative monitoring of pension-related bills? Is it all-encompassing for this legislative session?
That's correct.
Yes.
I just have a question based on your background. Your observations, the last few years, the fire service has been very active in going to the Capitol. They have been mimicking what the healthcare industry does, where they, I don't know if it's a Doctor Tuesday or whatever, but you see a bunch of white coats around the Capitol. It's a sight to see them working their legislative initiatives. Could you just give us an idea of what we could expect as far as needing to be at the Capitol and times when we might have to testify for or against bills, the need to have our members present to support our position?
Sure. I think some of it is TBD, right? We don't know who our Speaker of the House will be, for example. So a lot of things have yet to fall into place, but will be over the next month or so. As my mentor used to tell me, you must be present to win. So I think being in the Capitol is really important. Making sure that members know what you're working on is important. It lets them know that you are invested. Excuse me. And I think that that's one of the things that we'll work really closely with Anu on is just, I'm sometimes an over-communicator, but just making sure that you all aren't surprised about when bills get set. We'll be monitoring everything, so we'll know in advance and hopefully be having conversations with the members that are sponsoring legislation so that we all have a sense of the timing of how this is going to work. Again, some of it is out of control, but that's what we're here to provide as a resource for you all so that you know when things are happening and when it's important to be there. But yes, I do anticipate that it will matter for there to be a presence this session in the Capitol.
Great, thank you.
Any further discussion? All right, thank you, Denise. Do we have a motion?
Actually, not for Denise, but just moving forward, I know that we have the Schlater Group that we've been working with, and We're bringing on Denise for this this session. I do think, as a board, something we need to consider is a lobbyist contract that is specific to our fund individually. Those, you know, that can focus on strictly pension-related matters moving forward, just as an idea and something that I think would be important moving forward.
Sorry, just to clarify what you said there, and not straying into, say, firefighter issues that are outside of the fund.
Yes.
Got it.
And I fully support that. I believe that we have a big enough agenda that it should solely be focused on the pension and not on other items. So I support this.
I'll move that we approve a contract for fund lobbyist.
All right.
I'll second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move to agenda item number 4. This is the investment policy statement and operating procedures review. And with us remotely today is Erin Lally from Makita and Anu. I don't know if you want to start or if you'd like Erin to start.
Sure. Thank you, Trustee Bass. Just as a quick refresher, what's included in your packet are a couple of documents so initially you'll see there are two summary tables. One is for the Callan recommendations and then a summary of the Makita summary of proposed changes to the IPS as well as to the operating procedure. The second document, that's Makita summary, is a little bit dated given since the November board meeting, we have worked with Jackson Walker to make sure that the two critical pieces of governing documents that's before you, the investment policy statement as well as the operating procedure, goes through a robust legal review as well. And from a high level, the proposed changes pertain to essentially three main buckets. The first is with regards to Callan recommendations, some of the proposed changes with regards to detailed benchmark information, policy target type information that Callan recommended to be included in the IPS is one of the changes, big changes that you will see. And then the second bucket pertains to the passive investment approach that the board has engaged in over the course of last couple of years from a best practices standpoint. And again, this is something the Pension Review Board recommends as well. With any current practices that the board is engaged in, those should be memorialized or reflected in the investment policy statement for future board members to know and learn about as well. And then also something that, again, the Pension Review Board recommends from a benchmark standpoint, and that's one of the major changes reflected in the investment policy statement, is that the benchmark that a pension board uses to evaluate fund performance or evaluate managers should be clear, transparent, consistent, in line with the fund's actual asset allocation, as well as a gold standard, could be fully investable as well. So that the benchmark, the two benchmarks you will see, and Aaron would explain that more, is in line with the recommendations that the Pension Review Board made, as well as Trustee Bass, of course, worked with Makita in making sure that those two pieces of changes with the passive investing explanation and providing context, as well as the benchmark changes, reflect the general direction that the board is taking. And then the third bucket pertains to just cleanup type changes, consistency, as well as with regards to securities litigation, there is an issue that we often run into where the securities litigation firms would reach out to us with a potential matter, and then we often have to go back and say to them that this falls outside of our board meeting date, so we wouldn't be able to take any action. So the recommendation is twofold in that regard: to increase the securities litigation loss threshold from 250K to 500K, more in line with our asset size, or in relation to our asset size, as well as to allow the executive director the option to be able to make a decision if there isn't a board meeting date set by the deadline that the securities litigation firm has to meet. So at a very high level, those are the proposed changes, and I'll turn it over to Aaron to provide more context and a little bit more substantive discussion on some of those changes.
Thank you, Anu. Good morning, everyone. You see on the screen the cover page for the IPS. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Great. So thanks for the introduction, Anu, and everyone. The changes today are all consistent with what we discussed at the prior meeting and what we've mentioned in prior meetings over the last year to year and a half. So the culmination of that are the two policy documents in the packet today with all the red lines from Makeda, Jackson Walker, staff, everybody. I will just bring you to the three or four biggest changes in terms of visual red lines on the document, as well as kind of change to procedure, and walk you through with a little extra detail. So I'm just running through it here. You'll see a lot of pages with just cleanup text throughout. So one important one that Anu started to describe and we've discussed previously is the concept of the benchmarking. And for the purposes of how we recommend doing this and how we recommend memorializing it in the document, in the policy, is two benchmarks, one that's long-term in nature and one that's more current or short-term in nature. So this total fund performance benchmark is the reference benchmark that we discussed at the prior meeting and Anu started to describe as well. So the idea here is this is a very simple, fully investable benchmark consisting of three index funds that you could easily invest in at very low cost. And what this will seek to measure is a sanity check on, does the added complexity actually add any value? So, you know, asset classes like private equity, private real estate, high yield bonds, emerging market debt. None of that is actually in this benchmark, but through the regression analysis we did over the prior half a year, we evaluated and determined that this simple benchmark consisting of stock and bond securities actually does a very good job of replicating the return pattern. So the whole idea here is this, you may see deviation quarter to quarter, but over the long term, we want to make sure that the fund's return is exceeding this total fund benchmark. And if it is, that is evidence that the complexity in the portfolio is worth it. Conversely, if we're failing to meet this benchmark over long periods of time, it indicates that all that extra complexity is not worth it. And we will, as a group, consider if changes should be made or if there's valid reasons for the underperformance relative to that. Over the shorter period, quarter to quarter, you'll likely see more conversation against the dynamic benchmark. And the dynamic benchmark, the calculation here is the exact same as the dynamic benchmark that's currently in our performance reports, but we are now formally memorializing it in policy and adding the reason and the composition construction of it. And the idea here is it's taking your actual weights of your different asset classes, multiplying those by your individual asset class benchmarks. And the evaluation that this indicates is, are the active managers adding value? Because it's kind of removing the allocation differences. And it simply is, is the implementation adding value? And that's the implementation of using active strategies rather than subsector passive indices. So now we finally, so we have it all memorialized for the board, for participants, and for any other stakeholders. I'm going to fast forward through here to section 7, investment principles, and section 8, asset allocation. So the investment principles is a new paragraph. We pulled from different areas through the document and put this all in one place, outlining that, you know, how the board looks at risk and the fact that a lot of asset classes that don't say equity in the name actually do have equity-like risk to them. Certain things like, say, high-yield bonds, real estate, venture capital. And so the purpose of this is, again, to put in writing this concept and for all stakeholders to understand it and for the board and us to always remember that just because we are diversifying away from, say, stock market risk, a lot of these other asset classes do contain with them some equity-like volatility. The second paragraph here talks about active management versus passive management. And for many decades, pension plans, before index funds were so affordable and readily available, almost always used active management everywhere. And so that served almost as like the baseline positioning. What we're trying to do here is flip that 180 degrees. Passive is really the baseline, and active is used when there is belief that it can truly deliver active performance, outside performance. So we put that in writing, given that, you know, that is your low-cost starting point. And then again, the same concept of adding complexity only when it's when we believe it's warranted. So there's language at the bottom of the page under asset allocation that adds to that same concept. Here on the asset allocation targets, historically, the fund had sub-targets and these broad ranges. These broad ranges never really served much value. And kind of a Callan recommendation was you're adding kind of confusion. So what we've done is remove these broad ranges and make reference to here Appendix B, which outlines your actual targets, all of which have ranges. So it simplifies and actually, you know, makes it more clear about how things are actually being managed and evaluated and monitored. Bunch of cleanup language. We under this proxy voting section, there's been a lot of headlines about different states, red and blue, fighting opposite ways on proxy voting and its purpose and lawsuits. And the most important thing is that we want to use proxy voting only in the best interests of the fund and its beneficiaries, and not for any social means or political means. And so there's some simplified clarifying language here that managers, which is how you do it, vote. They will vote proxies for you, and they must vote in the best interest of the fund and its members and its beneficiaries. Here is the target asset allocation that I mentioned. So you see every asset class has its target, its range, and its benchmark. So this is the culmination of our review, peer B guidance, Jackson Walker's review, and the IPPE report recommendations from Cal. You also notice there's, you see sections like this in blue and in blue. That is elements that were brought into the report, into the policy statement from the operating procedures. So I'll pause for a second for questions, and then as we go into the operating procedures, you'll see a lot of the colors are actually red, indicating deletions there and movement over here.
Aaron, I think we're all good here if you'd like to continue forward with the operating procedures.
Fantastic. So the operating procedures, as a result, become more streamlined as key elements were moved to the investment policy statement. See here, just five sections. This text here, this is the permissible asset classes. This was moved to the investment policy statement. This element here gets updated every year when we update our market assumptions. So nothing meaningful with these edits. This language here is what I was talking about that was eliminated because now we have the more refined asset class targets as opposed to these broad range asset class buckets. Here it is. This is not deleted. This is simply moved to the IPS. The blue up top under investment manager selection and termination, this is all language that is new. That was the suggestion of Callan from the IPPE. They suggested that not changes to the way the board makes decisions on manager terminations and hires. So not changes, but rather just you have to document and formally memorialize the process of what leads to this. And so that's what we've done. We've just put in writing what we've been doing all along. The bottom, all that performance objective language has been deleted, and in place is the new language that I already walked you through in the investment policy statement. And I think then ends with the securities litigation policy, which I will pass the baton, but I think Anu kind of already teed up what the key changes are.
And Trustee Bass, if you have anything to add, since of course you work closely with us on these proposed changes, if you have any comments.
Sure, yeah, no, just to begin, thank you, Aaron, for the really good explanation and rationale that you've provided today. And also just want to reiterate between comments you made and Anu made that the what we call total fund benchmark, the changes there really are gold standard per a number of entities, PRB, Makita as well as the CFA Institute. And this is something that's exciting to move forward with. While it's simplified, Aaron mentioned that it is representative, and that was a really key feature of the research that we did over this past year, was to ensure that the total fund benchmark was statistically representative of our fund. That's key. Otherwise, it wouldn't be useful. And so that was really important to nail that part down. Thank you again. There was a lot of work behind the scenes from Makita as well as Jackson Walker. And so thank you all very much. And that's all, Anu.
As far as our process goes, trustees, the statute lays out that the investment policy statement and the operating procedures has to go through three readings, and for the board to adopt at every juncture. So this would be considered the first reading of those two documents, and then we'll bring them back at the January meeting for a second reading, and then for a final adoption at the February board meeting. Chuck, does that sound correct?
That's right. And just as a reminder, it's a little bit different than the rule process that you have, where you have a first reading, a comment period, and then a second reading. The statute actually provides for the IPS, you have to have three straight board approvals. So it's just a little bit different, but heads up.
So the Go ahead.
I did have a question on the modification to the securities litigation section. I wasn't sure if Anu was going to go through it, but there was an addition stating that the executive director may make a decision at the fund's level of involvement without presentation to the board after consultation with the fund's outside counsel. I feel like there should at least be some sort of notification to either the chair, vice chair, and I feel like it should be included within the policy or procedures. I don't see it, but maybe I missed it.
Sorry. Thank you. 62 of the packet that speaks to, and I'll go ahead and see if that would be enough. Otherwise, of course, we can add more language, more in specifically in line with your request. Notwithstanding the above, if a decision regarding the fund's involvement in a securities litigation lawsuit is required prior to the date of the next regularly scheduled board meeting, the ED may make a decision regarding the fund's level of involvement without a presentation to the board. And so that decision is only going to happen if there isn't a regularly scheduled board meeting. And then I think we can add some language to speak to that the ED would inform the vice chair, as well as that we would provide an update to the board, or we may already have that in here. We can add that.
Yeah, no, we can definitely add that. I think the process right now is typically that it comes back to the full board. So just memorializing that, I think, Belinda, what you're saying is just having one of the trustees be aware that the recommendation has come in and that Anu is discussing it with that trustee. Is that what you're looking for? A notification?
I think that process would make sense, that, yeah, that we would inform the
I think that there the should be some, yes, some you're, sort of notification to either the chair or vice chair.
You're right. The way it's drafted right now, it would be a full ED decision, so we can certainly incorporate,
yes,
a notification to the chair or vice chair. That's absolutely doable.
And I think the intent of this piece was that if there's a time-sensitive situation where the next board meeting is after the fact, that,
yes,
it allows the leeway for,
exactly,
yeah, but I absolutely understand your position on that. So is that something that we can take action on this IPS today and then make that small revision for the second?
You can just approve it.
You can approve it with the modification discussed, and then we'll bring it back. Yeah,
and then the next reading will reflect that language for you to look at.
Ready to make a motion if everybody's ready. Okay. I move to adopt the investment policy statement and operating procedures review with modifications.
On first reading.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Motion passes 4-0. All right. Thank you very much, Aaron.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, we'll move on to agenda item number 5. This will be in closed session. This is the annual performance evaluation of the executive director. The time is now 9:39 a.m. The Board of Trustees of the Austin Firefighters Retirement Fund at this meeting on December 20, 2024 will now hold a closed session pursuant to Texas Government Code Section 551.074 to discuss personnel matters related to agenda item number 5. All right, the time is now 10:13 a.m. The closed session of the Board of Trustees of the Austin Firefighters Retirement Fund at this meeting on December 20th, 2024 has ended, and the board is now in open session. No action was taken by the board during the closed session. All right. Do we have a motion?
Yes. I will move to approve the executive director's salary effective as of January 1, 2025, as discussed, and would like to elaborate on that when we get into discussion.
All right. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. And discussion?
So for the benefit of our audience, I think it's important to understand that over the last 3+ years, we have had an enormous amount of changeover in the pension office. Having to rebuild the office, having to move into updated, newer, higher performing pension software, and now dealing with the legislative process and a funding sounding restoration plan, it has been quite the uphill battle, and ANU has performed exceptionally well every step of the way. And so therefore we are very happy that she's with us and will continue to be with us for a long time.
Yes, I want to reiterate that. The word I use for ANU is relentless. Nobody works harder, and we're all very, very pleased that she is here, as well as the staff. Thank you all very much for what you all do day in and day out. There is so much work that goes into all of this, and often it's behind the scenes, and very few people, I think, fully understand the amount of time, energy, and effort that goes into all the things that you all do. So thank you all very much. And I do also want to mention that the compensation adjustment was reflective of what was agreed last year this time and was to be implemented over the course of the year and put into effect now. And so I just want to make that point. And so I think we're ready to take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. And no opposed, so that passes 4-0. Okay, agenda item number 6, consider approval of proposed 2025 budget. Okay.
Trustees, included in your packet is the proposed operating budget for 2025. You will see that the total expense, the percent, is going up from last year, and that's predominantly reflective of the additional expenses that we project to incur this upcoming year associated with the session work, the legislative work, from actuarial to legal legislative consulting is part of the reason why you will see the budget numbers going up for the most part. And then, of course, with the retiree payroll, that amount has increased as well. And there are some additional increases associated with just the regular contracts that we have, say, with our financial consultant or Makita, where there are inbuilt increases of the contract amount every year. So it encompasses all of those. And then with our insurance, there were some increases there as well. And speaking of like the officers and directors and officers liability insurance and cybersecurity, we haven't had a chance to really dig deep and consider whether or not those insurances meet our needs. And these are just the ones that we have been carrying forward from when I started with the fund. So. Once we have the session work and then the software work behind us, those are some areas that we would be looking into in the future. But from a cost standpoint, there are some marginal increases associated to those. I wasn't planning to go over every single item, like the office, the building that we office in, Of course, we own the condo, we own the office space, but there are increases associated with improvements and changes they're making to the building. So the condo association fee is going up, then slight increases with the IT consultant that we hire. Makita, I already mentioned. The one thing that we did do with the actuarial work is Chiron was very accommodating, and we negotiated with them to see if we could come up with a defined scope of their work for session time, and then they agreed to put a cap on their fee as well. And so hopefully we'll stay within that cap. If not, then of course I'll come back and update you all. But I just wanted to mention that Chiron was very helpful and engaged with us in that process. So as far as the budget goes, of course, there was about a $3 million increase in the retiree payroll from last year. So we reflected that in the proposed budget as well. So some of those numbers are, again, associated with the professional services fee that are going up, partly because of the session work or legislative work. Now, as far as administrative expenses go with regards to staff salary, I want to be mindful of, like we have been in the past, what we are requesting, and I am going to request a lump sum amount to be used based on performance or merit-based adjustments that I want to offer to staff. And then come 2026, my recommendation would be for the board to come back and we can reevaluate the total compensation that's offered to staff based on the compensation study that LogicComp did for us. LogicComp included staff compensation evaluation in their report as well. So that's something I would be leaning on when I come back to you all in 2026. So at this point, I was going to make the same ask I made last year for a 20 to 25K salary adjustment. Some of it can be used as a one-time. The rest can be used as a merit-based salary increase for staff. But of course, we'll be reporting on those numbers to you all. And a 20 to 25K, just from a salary standpoint, if we were to look at the staff without the ED position, translates to effectively a 3 to 4% raise if we were to give that raise to staff. But it's going to be merit-based, of course. So I just wanted to provide some context there. I didn't include any numbers in the operating budget, but I just wanted to make that ask and see wherever the board feels comfortable. They can approve either of those amounts. That's all I have, and happy to answer any questions.
No questions.
All right. I will go ahead and make the motion to approve the proposed 2025 budget as presented.
Would that include the $25,000 for potential staff raises,
yes,
merit or otherwise?
Oh, yes.
Yes. Great.
And do we have a second?
A second.
Okay. Any discussion?
I have a question for Chuck and Alicia. Is that sufficient from a motion or a voting perspective? With the addition of the staff salary amounts, and the prior motion was inclusive of a news, right? So, or do we need to include that in as part of this motion?
I think it's what's been adjusted from what's been presented. It doesn't need to stay. I'm not sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so I think it would be the budget as presented with the adjustments to reflect the executive director's salary and the merit increase first amount. But you could approve it with those modifications.
So then, just to revise, the motion is to approve the proposed 2025 budget as presented with the adjustments for merit pay, in addition to compensation, 20 to 25K for staff, as well as the compensation adjustment for the executive director.
And I'll second that.
Any discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, motion passes 4-0. All right, agenda item number 7 is the executive director report. Anu?
Trustees, the first update pertains to securities litigation matter that had been brought to us, and I'll turn it over to Elisa to provide an update on that item. Thank you.
Sure, and this is just a brief report. So one of your securities monitoring firms had brought a case and made a recommendation that we look at it and that the fund consider pursuing a lead plaintiff status. This is one of those examples that Anu discussed earlier where the lead plaintiff filing deadline was in between board meetings. Regardless, we went through the process, evaluated their recommendation, and in accordance with your policy, you have certain factors that we look at.
Elisa, I'm sorry if I may interrupt. I think since we've skipped to 7B, if I believe we're supposed to go into closed session for this.
We, unless you all want to discuss the details, I'm just going to keep it very high level.
Anu, are you okay with that? Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. So really just the report to you all is that we did evaluate it. We went through the policy, evaluated it. The deadline was before the board meeting. We did talk with the monitoring firm, and after full consideration, determined that it was not in the best interest of the fund to pursue that at this time. And again, that's part of why we made the recommendation for the changes to the policy so that we can continue to follow this policy as these come in. So if you want to discuss details of the case, we certainly can go into closed session, but otherwise we just were reporting back to you in accordance with policy that it was considered.
Trustees, the next item on the agenda pertains to the pension administration software. I would like to first thank staff for all the work that they have put in. So something to note, for this year, the board had approved ProValiant, the pension software, to provide pension software implementation oversight, and staff decided to just take on all the additional work, and we did not use ProValiant at all this year. So you will see in the proposed budget, something that I failed to mention was for ProValiant, the proposed budget did not include anything for that particular item. So we don't expect to use ProValiant moving forward, given staff has been carrying all that weight, and it's not easy. I have not been as closely involved. Just to give you some flavor, so right now where we stand, there were three main deliverables associated with this software implementation. We are now kicking off deliverable 3 phase, and staff has worked with LRS to wrap up deliverable 1 and 2. So these are just numbers, but what those deliverables include are every single step that the staff follows on a day-to-day basis to process benefits, process retiree annuity checks, to process all the contributions that we bring in, all the vendors that we work with. So not just the current software that we have, which is a more straightforward software, doesn't have as much checks and balances our processes, the additional processes that staff follows is something that they have been working on. So what that means is LRS would come to us and say, for all these different items, be it contribution processing or benefit processing or approval or drop distributions, these are, tell us what the day-to-day looks like. And so staff would, of course, has put together the process that they follow, and then LRS would then take that and come back with their designs for every single step, right? So with the software, it's a big software, and so every step would have a different design that then staff has to review, provide comments, ask questions, and make sure that they review every single design. And so each task, say contribution processing, could potentially have 15 to 20 designs for staff to look at, right? So I cannot even begin to explain how many designs. Of course, LRS has worked hard in meeting the timeline, and we are on track. But on top of all the day-to-day work that they handle, all the member inquiries that they process, the payroll that they process, questions that we answer, estimates like that we provide on an average, any single day, we would be working on 10 to 15 different estimates that we have to provide to our members under different scenarios. And then the member visits and consultation that they offer. So on top of all that, they're also working on the software piece, which is working with LRS, answering their questions, reviewing the designs, providing feedback, getting into a meeting with couple of hour-long meetings with LRS to answer questions or provide their comments, and then to come up with solutions for any issue that comes up, and it's not easy. It's time-consuming, it's cumbersome, so that's just the review phase. And then LRS takes all that and works on the software, and then comes back with, here's the software to be tested. So then they give us 15 to 20 different scenarios, like catch-all type scenarios or specific scenarios to test, say, processing contributions or processing or approving member benefits. They have to go through every single step based on the scenarios that are designed by LRS to test the software. And so far, just this year, starting from, just this year, the staff has worked on two of those deliverables, which have included numerous designs and then, I want to say, 150 test, or more than that, like at least test scenarios that they have run through the software. The good news is, of course, now they have their hands in the new software. They're getting the feel for how it's going to work, and they like it a lot. So that's the good news. But it's been just nonstop back and forth working on the software in addition to everything else that they do. And with Provaliant out of the picture, the staff is not only, of course, doing all the groundwork, but to a certain degree, they're also managing and monitoring the project, right, from the fund standpoint. And, of course, LRS is managing it from their standpoint. So all that to say, I cannot thank our staff enough for the excellent customer service that they provide. No mistakes, again, this year in processing benefits or responding to inquiries or getting drops processed or payroll processed. Everything's been on time. Of course, we bother Jackson Walker a lot because as they go through that process, they ask analytical, critical questions with the understanding that they are setting precedents. And so we want to make sure we document everything that they do, as well as the inquiries that they respond to or issues that they find. We still find issues and concerns that we process through, like a beneficiary didn't get paid for however long because they just didn't come to us to claim. And anyway, so point being, I just want to mention to you all that the success of the fund and everything that we have accomplished so far relies on their shoulders as much as on ours. So I just wanted to mention that to you all. And then, of course, Jackson Walker, with every week, the time that they spend with us, talking to us, and every week we have something new, which is interesting, but it fails to, it amazes me that there's never been a week where we go to them and say, we don't have anything for you. So as far as the update goes, as I mentioned, in addition to, of course, the website, the electronic document management system, we have completed the phase one and two of the design review and then the testing of the software. And then now we are getting into the third phase, which is going to be a very crucial group of designs because we'll be working on retiree payroll, as well as Member Direct, which is the portal that the membership is going to start using, hopefully come next year, to be able to access their drop account numbers and make certain requests of us. So like the essentially the member portal. And so we would be working through those. And then, of course, as a heads up, hopefully, the plan changes or the reform package will pass. And what that would also mean for us is to go back to LRS and work on those design changes that needs to be added to our software in light of the, say, a new tier that's been added or any other changes that come out of the legislative session. So that's an additional piece that I will be talking to you all about mid next year, hopefully, once our bill passes. That's where we are at, and I'm happy to answer any questions on the software work.
No questions, but just a huge thank you to staff. I know it's just from hearing everything Anu stated. I've done system implementations before. They are arduous, lots of work, so thank you very much.
Moving on, included in your packet are proposed meeting dates for 2025. They're not set in stone, but if you could just pencil in those dates as a heads up, we wanted to provide it to you as early as possible.
Just to comment on those dates, they all work for me except for May, and that week is Memorial Day week, and there's stuff that I do, so I'll just be aware that I won't be able to make that, but if y'all can, then great.
We'll work with you on updating probably the meeting date for May and come back with an updated version for the board. Also included in your packet are the financial statements, the final for October, as well as the draft for November. Final for October and a final for November. We don't have the year-end financials yet, which we will present to you in January. And nothing significant to note here. We've already talked about like the professional services with actuarial work, that budget items over budget because of all the FSRP work that we have been doing with Chiron. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
I don't have any questions. For Anu, I've already discussed, but I'd like to hear from John as well about the transition to Frost Bank and just your thoughts on the new banking provider.
Very positive. So one of the main reasons why we had switched is become a part of a bigger size bank, and they offer that, but still offer that small type service. And our customer service at Frost Bank has just been outstanding. With our prior bank, we would have to constantly reach out to them over the same question before we got a response back. And so just from that standpoint, it's been very beneficial. Also, with our savings account, it's in a money market, so it's being pulled out to like a stiff account overnight. And so our interest from that bank account will be a lot more than what we were getting as well.
Great. Thanks for the feedback.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Thank you, Anu. We'll move to agenda item number 8, roadmap for future meetings. Do we have anything? Okay, with nothing, we'll move to agenda item 9, call for future agenda items.
I'd like to add a discussion on drop distributions. There's been some discussion on retirees' Facebook page asking us to consider that. And with that, it would be helpful if I could get an understanding of the level of activity before the last change we made when we went from 8 to 12. I'm interested to see what kind of change we had there. And because since that's a workload issue, and you know, we've already talked about the potential for adding staff down the road, and this could impact that. So I just want to be prepared for that discussion.
And Anu, on that add for future items, do we want to put that on any particular month? Is there a preference?
We could have that discussion in January.
Okay.
We can add it to the January meeting. And essentially, I believe the request is to consider increasing the number of drop distributions that are allowed. So currently, we allow 12 over the life of the drop account that a member has, with 4 maximum every year. And I believe the request is to increase it to more than 12. So we can come back with some additional information and for board discussion in January.
Okay. Anybody have anything else? All right. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas, everybody. And with that, it is 10:41 a.m. and the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.